Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
We have spoken a lot on this show about just the need for better sex education in Ireland and how too often young people are learning from the worst teacher of them all, pornography. Well, with me now is Bob McQuaid, who really could have benefited from better education about sexual health. Bob is here to share his story so that other men and young men around the country do not suffer in silence. Bob, thank you so much for making the trip down from Kildare to come and chat to us today. So thank you for popping into the studio. Now, you're a dad of a teething youngster at home. Are you getting much sleep, first of all?
We're getting a bit more sleep currently, Jen.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for having me, by the way, first and foremost. But yeah, we're just going through a new stage where our daughter is now putting herself to sleep. We put her in a bed, we give her a kiss, we say goodnight, and we walk out and we close the door and she goes to sleep.
Would you have a chat with Lottie Ryan? There's something going on there. She can't get the kid out of the bed. Maybe we'll get you to give her a ring today. So many listeners will know that feeling, you know, and all the different stages of, you know, children and getting sleep and not getting sleep. But your journey to that stage, to this stage where you're at now, is quite complex, isn't it? It's quite complex than most. Can we start with that idea of sex education and the terrible lessons that online porn gave you?
Yeah. So from, I mean, sex education was non-existent. I mean, when I was growing up, I mean, I was born in the 90s, I was in school in the early 2000s, and it just wasn't talked about. There's one memory I have of some lady at some point coming in to tell us, you know, how not to impregnate somebody. And that was kind of the extent of it. Never spoke about it. That was primary school, secondary school. It was pretty much the same. It was very much a taboo subject, not something that we wanted to talk about. From the teaching point of view, from our point of view, I mean, we're teenagers. We're going through puberty. We're trying to learn about those things.
We need to know.
We've no one to tell us. We've no one with experience or guidance to help us or talk to us about it. So naturally, you naturally go towards pornography. Of course you do. It's something that, you know, a lot of young people are curious about. And it can teach a lot of bad lessons. One that definitely came to me was that it just should be so easy to have sex. You can have sex in seconds. Anybody can do it. And it just happens. And it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't for me.
And it's not for a lot of people, to be honest with you. It's not as easy as that.
So I'm being told. Yeah.
Okay. So as a fellow with urges like any other, how did you deal with not being able to perform like you thought you should?
There's numerous ways. I mean, you know, when you physically can't have sex, you find ways around it. Different forms of sex, different variations of it. You try to work that way around. But at the end of the day, you still now have a feeling inside you that, you know, there's something wrong here. This is not, I shouldn't be fighting against this. I should be working with it. And it just became really, really difficult. And of course, pornography, like we spoke about earlier, that becomes a part of it. But also, you know, it's not that I'm telling this story as somebody who sat in my room on my own for the last 10 years. You know, I've had experience, I've had relationships, but just that part has just been really, really difficult.
Did you have anybody to talk to?
I always feel really guilty about this part of the story because I had so many people. And that's the worst part, Jen, is that I have a lovely family. I've loads of great friends who I've spoken to about lots of different topics, and I've racked my brain for the last 10 years to why I never spoke about it, because I'm quite an open person. And the only word I could land on was shame. I was just so ashamed of myself that I didn't have sex, that I told a lie, that my life was a lie, that I was just not being true. And I was so scared. I was terrified a doctor was going to tell me, oh, there's something wrong with you. You're a weirdo. You're strange. You're odd. And so that over time, if you don't take action, it builds. And it builds to a voice that's so strong that actually can nearly threaten you. How don't you dare speak about that to somebody. This is your secret you've got to keep, because if you don't, the world's going to fall down.
That sounds very stressful. I can't imagine going through something like that. Do you remember opening up the first time about it?
Oh, yeah.
Go on.
100%. Yeah, it was. I opened about to my now fiance and the mother of my child. And she basically, we were in a very early stage of our relationship, and she just pulled me and said, Bob, what's going on? Why are we avoiding sex every time we get to it? Everything looks like it might happen. We're dodging or avoiding it. And eventually I was trying to hold it back. I didn't want to tell her. And eventually I had to tell her. And so I told her, and it was the most freeing moment. I was so scared to do it, but I did it. And from there, I could access help. I mean, straight away, literally that evening, the first time I spoke, we could access help straight away. But I needed her to help me to get to the point where I could speak about it.
How old were you? Do you mind me asking?
No problem at all. No, I was 26 years of age.
Okay, that's a long time to carry that.
Yeah.
Alone,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
It must have felt quite lonely at times.
Yeah.
And just this cloud over you and over your life. Now you talk, I would say fair play to the missus. Good on her. And obviously she was quite open and understanding. And you said it was then that you accessed help. So where did you go? Did you go to a GP?
No. So I put it into Google. That's the first thing I did.
Yeah.
I put my symptoms straight in there and said, like, let's see, can we find out what this is? Can we get an idea of it? And yeah, it was basically a thing called phimosis. It's really, really common. It's a lot of people have it.
Really?
Yeah, it's way more common. I thought I had this like alien condition.
Yeah.
I really don't. Very, very basically, it's basically that the foreskin is so tight that it doesn't retract.
Yeah.
That's basically it. And then how you fix that issue is you get circumcised. That's it. Simple as that.
So when you found this out, was it relief or was it a regret that you could have done this so many years ago if you had spoken up and all? Oh God,
all
so
of many those, mixed yeah, all of those emotions, Jen. Yeah, just I mean, first the first one's relief because I'm like, okay, this can be fixed, this can be helped. That's the first one, but then of course, instantly you go to, oh, why didn't I look this up? That was another. Why didn't I even search it in Google myself? And again, I keep going back to the same thing. It's just pure shame. Mm. How could I even not prevent myself to type the things into my... I'm on my phone all day. How could I not? And I'll tell you, I remember the thought. I was so terrified that someone would see it and my secret would be, you know, found out that I would prevent it from searching it anywhere.
You must have became a master at avoiding intimate scenarios and coming up with kind of stories and getting out of things. Would you say that? Like, how would you do that? Like, back in the day when you met girls who or whatever and you were into them, how would you get out of that? Or what would you, excuses would you say?
Yeah, it would often just, you know, it would start off from a point of view of, you know, you would try to do something. And you know, it sounds delusional now, but in my mind, I mean, I was telling myself every time, like, oh, it'll be different now because of this and this will change. And so it was just kind of failed experiences. And then what comes after that then is basically that you, to protect yourself, you turn off that part of your brain and you go, when I think about having sex, it makes me feel really, really crappy. And so I am going to avoid thinking about that as much as I possibly can and detach from it.
So I'm pretty sure that when you had the minor procedure to get it all sorted out, but you've had this build up of years and years of years of turning off that part of your brain. How, I'm sure it's not like a tap, you can turn that back on again, right?
No, not at all. So, I mean, I thought when I was getting this procedure, I was like, okay, this is the golden ticket. I'm fixed. Everything's fine. My doctor said to me, look, you've healed for 12 weeks. And after 12 weeks, you're perfectly safe to engage in whatever you'd like to do. And then I get to that point and, you know, it's healed and I'm feeling good. And then I have these new problems where, you know, maintaining an erection, being able to have sex in that way becomes, it's still difficult. That part, that initial part is now removed, that's gone. But now I've a new problem.
Because you've had years of conditioning yourself to be a certain way and think a certain way. You can't 100%. Just switch it like that.
No, of course not. No, I mean, I had this conversation with a friend a while ago where I said, you know, when people think about sex or kissing, it's excitement, it's something that should make you feel good and you look forward to. For me, it was, like I said, the complete opposite. It was let's run as far away from this as we can because it just makes me feel so bad.
So what did you do? What happens next then?
So next in the story, I mean, my partner Fiona is such a beautiful person, and she has helped me so much in this journey. So when we got to the point where we thought it was going to be all fixed and it wasn't, we tried different things, we had conversations, but effectively my partner Fiona turned to me and said, okay, Bob, I think there's a lot going on in your head about this, and very understandably, and I think it might be a good idea to maybe search for a sex therapist and start having conversations about that.
Should have came to me, Bob. I know loads of
So we're here.
I'm
so we're here.
On the show with sex therapists. They're on the show every bloody week. Okay, so this makes sense. This makes complete sense. I'm kind of surprised that your GP wouldn't have thought of that, obviously, but they're only the medical side of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would presume that you would have had a certain amount of therapy after hiding something like that for so long. So fair play to Fiona. So she decided, let's do the therapy mm-hmm. and let's work on that part of it, because that needs a bit of work.
100%.
And you went down the sex therapy route, and how did that go?
Yeah, I mean, it went great. I went to sex therapy, was the January of that year I started that. We got together in September, so it was 4 months later. And I'd never been to therapy before at that point, so my first experience was this. So I had to sit down in a room with a stranger and tell her the whole story, like everything. And at this point, I actually hadn't told Fiona everything. Mm-hmm. I told her a percentage of it. Mm-hmm. So I had to tell her the whole thing. And we started to talk about it, and I said, oh, I've got this thing called phimosis. And she instantly went, yes, I know what that is, Bob. And this is my field. I've worked with lots of people, had that experience.
Wow.
Instantly my shoulders, they drop, and I'm like, oh God, okay. So she knows what this is. She understands. She's helped people before. She can help me. And ultimately I went in to sex therapy to be able to have sex. That was the idea. And unbelievably, she worked with me to try and change my own mindset and to deal with obviously the years of trauma that mm-hmm. I had connected to it. And ironically, when I finished, towards the end, Fiona also came in with me and we did some together. But when we finished, I wasn't necessarily having sex in the full form. There was a very small variation of it, but not really. But she believed that I was ready, that my head was kind of clear. And in the very near future after that, I was able to, yeah.
Wow, that is communication and talking and all of that is part of it. Can we talk about the little blue tablets for a second?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's necessary.
Because they're over-the-counter drugs mm-hmm. that are readily available to people if they need a bit of help for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But there's still a bit of stigma around getting Viagra, isn't there?
Ah, Jen, I could tell you some crazy stories
about this. Tell us one. What sticks out the most?
Well, the one I'll tell is actually only from a few weeks ago, ironically. My partner, Fiona, I've been taking Viagra equivalents since I basically learned that I have low testosterone, which basically feeds into often erectile dysfunction.
Okay.
So I've been taking them since then. And basically, it's just a normal thing for me now. You know, it wasn't when I first took it, but now it is. And so my partner was over at the shops and she went to the pharmacy and she said, I know Bob's low, so I'm going to get him some Viagra. And they looked at her and said, oh no, that's for men, in case you didn't know. And
you don't say.
Really? You know, and she was like, yes, I know, I'm buying them for my partner, obviously. You know, I mean, what else am I buying? And it was this real awkward exchange where she said, I have to get the pharmacist, and the pharmacist comes over and he's like, I can't sell them to you. I have to speak to your partner. Can you ring your partner and I'll take the phone and I'll bring the phone into the back for a private conversation. Nobody hears about it. Do you want a bag on the way out and I'll hide them? And oh, shame. Go back to the same word again. Shame, 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 shame. Being driven for absolutely no reason. I have a problem. There's a tablet that works for it, like anything else. But yet this crazy overreaction to selling me these tablets. Yeah.
That is insane. That is insane. Now, as I said at the start, you are a dad now.
Yes.
How old is the teething child?
She was one in June.
One? Yeah, wow. Yeah. Did you ever really feel that would happen for you?
So in the process of starting with the circumcision and working with that doctor and kind of going along the way and the sex therapist, they basically said, look, it's a good idea if we do bloods. Let's do basic blood tests. So we did a blood test, went in. I was thinking, just go in just to see what's happening inside. Mm-hmm. And basically my doctor turned around to me again at the age of 26. I'm living with my partner about 3 weeks at this stage. And he says, do you plan on having kids? And I'm like, kids? I was like,
what are they?
I mean, yeah. Maybe in the, you know, crazy future, yeah, but like not. And he's like, well, like in the next few years. I'm like, I don't know, like 3, 5, 6, I don't know, yeah, maybe. And he's like, okay, well, we need to get you tested then straight away. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, well, your testosterone level is like something of a 45, 50 year old man, and you're in your mid-20s and you're physically fit, so there's something going on here. And he actually said to me at the time, he said, and by the way, he said, if your GP had got these results, he probably would have said you're in the normal range and he wouldn't have done anything. But I know, working in this field, that's not a good level. So went very quickly, went and got tested, semen analysis, came back, went in. He said, yeah, motility, it's the movement, fine. Sperm count, fine. Morphology, on the other hand, not good. Morphology basically being the amount of good sperm, normally shaped, all of that. And he's like, so basically, based on these results, there's a less than 1% chance you'll ever have a child naturally.
Oh my days.
And I'm sitting there with my partner out in the car of, at this stage, what, 7 months? Just moved in together, 26. And I'm like, okay. At this point, I still haven't had sex fully. I'm able to have sex, but I can't climax. I don't get to any of those points in it.
Were you thinking, I can't give her this news?
I'm thinking, I don't know how she's going to take this. Yeah, I really don't know.
Okay, well, at least you were thinking of telling her, so that is a good, progress.
Absolutely. We were so communicative. Yeah. We really went on the journey together. Great. So I went out into the car and I told her. It broke her heart, obviously. Mm. And naturally from there, you know, you have people, understandably, we're so young in a relationship, 7 months in our 20s. It was so early, you know. And obviously people said to her on her side, you know, look, you know, you're only in your 20s. It's only early, you know. And she was like, no, I love Bob. And we'll have a family, whatever way that looks like, no matter what. So we started a treatment, which was testosterone injections. And again, according to my doctor, a lot of doctors would laugh if you told them that's what you were giving them, because it's not a proven science necessarily to fix that. So I did them for 5 months. He said to me, look, nothing will happen for 9 months. I did them for 5 months and then we got pregnant after 5 months.
Oh, that old story. Yeah. It's not going to happen. Then it happens. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, what a story. And like I said at the beginning, quite a complex story, but I think there's a theme there. And the reason you wanted to come on the show and talk about it. Mm. And if someone listening now is having some problems that you have experienced, what would your advice be? What would you say to them?
It sounds so cliche, but obviously just talk and talk to somebody. That's the one thing I didn't do, and it's the regret that I'll have forever that I didn't speak to somebody anywhere, anybody. Just say, I need to just tell you this story. I need you to listen to the story of me for 5 minutes and see, can you help? And if not, can you point in the right direction to somebody that may be able to? Because one conversation would have removed a lot of what I experienced over the last 10 years.
And isn't it crazy that it was such a common thing that you had that you kept to yourself, and so many men go through it and keep it to, and I'm sure there's men listening, and I guarantee you there's one out there now listening who is probably going through what you went through and has not told anyone because of shame, because they think they're alone. You are not alone. You're never alone. And I thank you for coming in and telling your story. You can read Bob's story in full on the journal.ie's Voices column. Bob, thank you so much for coming in. And just talking so openly and honestly about your journey, hopefully it can help a lot of young men and prevent them from suffering in silence like you did for so many years. And shout out to Fiona.
Absolutely.
You
have to give her a shout out. Yeah. Big shout out to Fiona, my partner. I also want to just double down and say as well, thanks to Laura from the Journal. She was absolutely amazing and helped me to put this article together and get it out there.
And putting you in touch with us and you speaking on the show. Laura, all of them, all the women in your life. Amazing.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.